Sir Robin, you are the second good heart professor I shall have had the pleasure of interviewing for the Eminent Scholars Archive. We hope to make it a tradition to hear the views of the good heart professor at the start and end of tenure. I'm extremely grateful to you for agreeing to add to our archive, and could I start by asking you what your aspirations are for your time here?
I've been made a visiting member of two colleges, and I just hope to live life to the full in Cambridge as a quasi-academic.
And what subjects are you teaching?
Public law, in particular natural justice, mostly framed around judicial review and court processes, and then constitutional law, which again has a particular focus on judicial review and on European human rights.
Very interesting. On the matter of constitutional law, and given the very recent opening of the new Supreme Court, what are your feelings, Sir Robin, on the passing into history of the House of Lords?
I think it's long overdue. I don't think it will make very much difference to the work that the court in its new guise does, but it was very important to remove them geographically from and institutionally from the legislature and to give them their own home. But I don't think there's going to be much difference in the short term to the way in which it does its work or to the impact it has. It hasn't any difference in powers from that which it had as a committee of the House of Lords. It's just set aside, seen to be a court in its own right.
Very interesting. While you were in the Goodhart chair, can you say how you think you'll be able to draw upon your experience gained in high office as Lord Justice of Appeal from 1995 to 2007?
The judge's job is very practical, and there's not much time, however much you give to it, to devote the proper attention to principle. Well, I hope to bring to the work that I do some practicality in how in practice the law works and is made to apply on a case-by-case basis. So practicality, I suppose, is my best contribution.
During your career, you've been associated in various capacities with several socially very important and topical boards of inquiry as well as commissions, for example, the 1967 Casino Gambling, the Bahamas, the 75-76 William Tyndale School, and the 1981 Brixton Riots. How do you envisage drawing upon this wide range of experience during your tenure in the Goodhart Chair?
I suppose it will help me in the lectures that I'm giving on judicial review, because commissions of inquiry tend to be vulnerable to applications for judicial review to prevent them from doing their work, preventing them from publishing their report, stop them taking evidence from particular persons in whom they're interested. So it's the cutting edge, really, of a large part of judicial review.
If we can turn to your role in the Judicial Studies Board from 1989 to 1991, was this concerned at all with the way that law is taught in tertiary education in this country?
I wouldn't think we had much thought for our comparison with tertiary legal education, but we drew very heavily on academic lawyers, in particular from Cambridge, to keep the judges up to date with the law. Professor Spencer, for example, when I was involved with the Judicial Studies Board, lectured frequently at our residential seminars. Nicola Padfield did the same. So the traffic was the other way, really. It was the academics keeping the judges up to date and bringing the new judges online with the practicalities of sentencing, rulings on evidence, procedural problems that arise on a daily basis in court, on which there was always something new from the House of Lords or Court of Appeal Criminal Division in the main.
How interesting. Your Criminal Courts Review from 1999 to 2001 has been a major contribution to reforming criminal justice in England and Wales and led to the Labour government's Criminal Justice Act of 2003. Do you feel, Sir Robin, that by and large the resultant act reflected your original aspirations?
In many respects it did. These were recommendations which had been made by others before me, and some of them were blindingly obvious and needed to be attended to. Some of the procedural changes, evidential changes, broadly reflected what I had recommended. The Act was over-prescriptive, so I wouldn't like to claim responsibility for too much of the detail of the 2003 Act. Some of the more radical, it was said, recommendations on jury trial were not all accepted here, but some of them have been adopted in the Commonwealth, and some of them are gradually filtering through now, but that's been a slow progress.
Right. Well, I'm sure that you anticipated the emphasis in the reviews and the press on juries, because it's a very emotive topic in English law. Several of your recommendations were to make them more representative of national and local communities. Do you think, Sir Robin, this has been achieved?
Yes, I think it has. That was an obvious need, in which I drew a great deal on the experience of the United States in providing that everybody should serve on a jury, whatever their job, save only if they were ill or had criminal records. So I think that was one of the successes.
In your address to the Medico-Legal Society in April 2003, before publication of the Criminal Justice Bill, you said that you thought the objectivity of expert witnesses who gave their, and I quote, Olympian views, was in danger of being lost in the development of what you called, again I quote, a cadre of professional or sometimes not so professional experts. Has this problem been addressed in any way by the provisions of either the Act or the way the government has handled the reform of the criminal justice system?
I think it has been. There's been a great deal of attention to ensuring that expert witnesses are truly expert in their discipline and also are objective in the way they give their evidence. And there have been rules introduced, criminal justice procedural rules, which I had some hand in. So I think there's been a push, not only through the legislation, but also through the various expert witness bodies to try and enhance their status and the way in which they are treated by the courts. One of the problems is that there are too many institutions, there is not one body, and so there's I think a degree of, if not rivalry, there's a degree of lack of coordination.
Very interesting, Sir Robin. You talked as well in your review of online sentencing information systems. What did you mean by this, and has it been accommodated in the Act as you hoped?
No, I don't think it has. I learned this from New South Wales, in your own country, I think. They had a very advanced system of sentencing information in New South Wales 20 years ago, maybe longer, and I went out there and looked at that. And I thought these were aids that should be provided for the judges online, on the bench here, which would give them not only the information about the offender and the offence, and the tariff for sentencing and the options available, restorative justice possibilities, all on the screen. I don't think it's come about. The resources required are enormous in this country, and I'm not sure whether it extended beyond New South Wales and Australia, whether the other states there had it or not.
Right.
I've spoken to you as if you're an Australian, but you're not. You're South African, aren't you?
I'm South African.
Yeah.
But this point is of interest to me, of course, as a librarian.
Yeah. The answer is, I think, we're a long way off. The reason, in part, is fragmentation of the courts, various agencies involved in the criminal justice system. Police, prison, probation, health, employment, all of these who are one way or another involved in the disposal of criminal offenders and treatment of them have their separate hierarchies, budgets. There's a lack of coordination. Some of them have different online systems which don't talk to each other properly. They don't pass information from one to the other.
Very interesting. Finally, Sir Robin, I'm intrigued by your continuing involvement in legal problems related to the Caribbean and more recently the Southwest Pacific. What is the basis for this attraction to tropical islands, Sir Robin?
Well, wouldn't you like to come with me to a tropical island, whatever I was doing? I was in Chambers, which had the sort of dying last vestiges of the British Empire, and my people in my Chambers when I joined them years ago, if there was a sedition in what used to be called Nyasaland, or riots in Johannesburg, or a murder in Singapore, they came to my head of Chambers, then Sir Elwin Jones, and he went out to do whatever had to be done. And this work filtered down a bit over the years, be from time to time commissions of inquiry in the Caribbean, or the nuclear trials inquiry in Australia, and all sorts of things. So it was very exciting. It was a lovely change to get away from London. So I wasn't never doing the same work twice. Great variety, I think, is the answer to your question.
I wondered about that. So, Robin, thank you for this fascinating insight into your aspirations and your views and observations and some of the tropical juristic problems with which you've been involved over your illustrious career. I hope that you'll be willing to be interviewed in the summer when your tenure is drawing to a close. There was a good deal of interest engendered by Professor Koskinyemi's contribution, and I know that visitors to the archive look forward eagerly to your own contributions. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.